home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Meller.
Happy Saturday, February 7th, folks. The Saturday before the Super Sunday, which means that spring training is right around the corner. Cannot wait for that. But one last week here before we really roll up our sleeves and get into baseball mode. I'll let you enjoy tomorrow and all your football festivities for the Super Bowl. But, of course, we're going to be talking quite a bit about the White Sox over the next hour here, as we do each and every Saturday here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. So, almost moments after we wrapped up last Saturday, the news broke, courtesy of ESPN reporter Jesse Rogers, that the White Sox had agreed to terms with Austin Hayes on a one-year deal. The veteran outfielder is somebody who we're going to discuss here momentarily, but I do also want to get to a trade that the White Sox made last Sunday before we get into the Austin Hayes conversation, because the White Sox decided to take on Jordan Hicks and his contract and David Sandlin from the Boston Red Sox in exchange for Gage Zeal and a player to be named later. Interesting thing here is Jordan Hicks is somebody who was signed by the Giants a couple of seasons ago to be a starter. Now 29 years old, and after a couple of seasons in which it has not gone as planned, Hicks is likely to be in the pen for the White Sox. He's somebody who, at his heights, reached 104 miles per hour on the radar gun, has had some success in the bullpen. Chris Getz left it open to the possibility that Hicks could be somebody who the White Sox would consider in the rotation, but I think that's to satiate Hicks. The reality is, and even Hicks admitted this when he met the media on Sunday, that he's somebody who I think recognizes that his success comes in the bullpen. And so the White Sox kind of playing a lottery ticket here with Hicks, bringing him in where the Red Sox eat a good portion of the remaining salary on his contract. The bigger get, though, here for the White Sox is the acquisition of David Sandlin, who is somebody who the White Sox will have 6 years of control on and was the 10th rated prospect in the Red Sox system. He's 6'4", 215 pounds, and he is somebody who I would anticipate probably will begin the season in AAA. He spent time in AA and AAA last year for the Red Sox. I would anticipate that unless he absolutely blows the White Sox upper management away in spring training, I would anticipate Sandlin will probably begin the year in AAA. But you never like to close the door on anyone. He's somebody who will compete for a rotation spot. And at 24 years old, he has the ability to hit triple digits as well. And I think this is a good move by the White Sox to use some of their salary flexibility that they gained in the Luis Robert deal and to basically buy a prospect from the Red Sox to help them get out from underneath the Jordan Hicks deal to give the Red Sox some flexibility financially. But again, I love it because Hicks is somebody who you can envision, if he gets right, or even if he doesn't get back to his heights, Jordan Hicks is definitely a guy who can hit high 90s at the very least in velocity and maybe even touch triple digits again if he gets things going in the right direction. And because of that, love to have that option at the back end of the bullpen. Really like where the White Sox are headed. We talked a lot about Sir Anthony Dominguez last week. You've got now him, along with Leisure, Taylor, and Hicks in the mix. Four arms now with high velocity that the White Sox just did not have a couple of seasons ago. So that will make the bullpen better. And again, David Sandlin, a highly rated prospect in the Red Sox system, who the White Sox will now be able to mix in to the possible pitching rotation down the road here. At the very least, they're adding pitching depth to the organization, which is what you like to see and will help them be competitive in future years. Now, back to the Austin Hayes signing. Austin Hayes is somebody who has been an all-star in this league. He did so back in 2023 in Baltimore, and that, coincidentally enough, is when he was working with White Sox hitting director Ryan Fuller. Austin Hayes, at the age of 30, played in 103 games last season with the Reds. He hit .266 with a .315 on base and a .453 slugging percentage, 15 homers, 64 RBIs, and 60 runs scored. But the key here is his ability to absolutely crush lefties. He had a slash line of 319 with a 400 on base and a 549 slug last season. So that is clearly his strength. And at the very least, you know you have a solid short side platoon bat in Austin Hayes and potentially more here, as you'll hear from him later in the show. But first and foremost, we'll let you hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz, who addressed why Austin Hayes was so appealing.
I mean, he mashes lefties. He does. And, you know, it's not that, you know, he can't handle righties either. It's just, you know, it really jumped out to us, the ability to hit left-handed pitching. You know, when healthy, he's locked in. He's got a relationship, baked-in relationship with Ryan Fuller from his Baltimore days. So, you know, when we got on a call, you know, the first call with him and looked at some of his tendencies, you know, the last couple of years when he was going well, when he wasn't going as well. And, I mean, it was like they were on the same page right out of the gate. So I think that increased the comfort level for Hayes coming in here. He feels really good about where his game is. He feels really good about where his body is, most importantly. But to know that he's coming to a place, you know, with Showman and Fuller that have a pretty good understanding of his base, what makes him go, what makes him good. So, that certainly helped us get it to the finish line.
Hey, Chris, you may have answered it there with Fuller, but when you bring in a veteran with such a young group, is it almost 50-50 ability, and what is his character and leadership like? Is it so essential to have that right guy in there with a young group to help lead them or at least show by example?
Yeah, the talent part is the most important part, the on-field performance. But also, we know that what he offers in a clubhouse, how he conducts his business on the field, off the field. We have a young forming group that, you know, young players are impressionable often. And he, you know, whether it be Cincinnati or Baltimore, it was very clear in getting to know Austin more that, you know, he takes pride in helping other players and being a good teammate. And had plenty of stories of how he felt like he helped influence some of these younger players as they were getting comfortable at the major league level or trying to get comfortable at the major league level. So that certainly was a factor. And I know in conversations with Will, you know, as he was looking at this group, especially this outfield group, it was young. You know, it's a young, inexperienced group that, you know, certainly, you know, we can offer a runway. But it is nice to know that they're going into this with someone that's done it before, has gone through the ups and downs of this game and certain stretches and playing in certain environments. You know, Austin can help relieve any of that, you know, the stress that comes with unknowns. And we have felt that with certain individuals, you know, the last couple of years based on their experiences. So, you know, we felt like this was a really good fit for not only the talent, but what he brings to the table from a clubhouse standpoint as well.
With a lot of changes and additions to the team, where does Andrew Benintendi fit into plans for this upcoming season? And has there been any inquiries from other teams about adding him to their team?
I mean, we still really like Benintendi, you know, the left-handed bat. You know, he's hit 20 plus home runs the last 2 years. And, you know, he's a guy that you feel good about in the lineup. What has held him back are his legs. And, you know, being able to cover ground like he used to. So I know he feels good athletically right now. And, you know, that's going to be, you know, what really dictates the amount of outfield play that he'll get. At the very least, we're looking at a guy that we feel good about when he walks into the box. You know, in regards to interest from other clubs, we haven't had too many conversations about Andrew. You know, so we anticipate he's going to be on this club come opening day. And we still like it when he shows up in the box.
Kind of along the same lines of Benintendi, you mentioned Sosa earlier. And you kind of look at the layout of the infield and you look at the possibilities of DH. I know he really deserves credit for the way he kind of stuck with early struggles and was one of your more productive hitters last year. How does Lenin kind of fit in moving forward, though?
You know, there is a little bit of redundancy with the right-handed corner bats. You know, he obviously has played a fair amount of second base. There's going to be some opportunities still to play there, some first base and some DH. He's a player that we like having in the lineup, you know, but our roster has improved. And, you know, I still think there's going to be a lot of at-bats for Lenin. You know, I do. So, you know, I called it, you know, I would say it's a good problem to have with a quality like bat like that, that perhaps there are times that are difficult to get into the lineup. But we know what he brings to the table offensively. We need to get him more comfortable at first base, continue to improve him at second base. So there is some level of versatility that is in his game and, you know, needs to remain for him to get the consistent at-bats that we would like him to have just because of the power output that he brings.
At the end of last season, you said Mike Vassell would be a, you know, kind of a relief option for you guys. How has your situation evolved, or how is it that, you know, maybe he's a guy you look to stretch out, you know, come spring camp?
Yeah, he's building himself up to be in a multi-inning role. If we were to, you know, want to extend him even further, we have those capabilities. You know, so he'll come in, you know, being able to pitch more than one inning. You know, he did that in the bullpen last year. You know, he took a couple starts as well. So we're still kind of open-minded on that. You know, it is nice that now that the Rule 5 handcuffs are off, so, you know, that allows us to be perhaps a little bit more creative, you know, with him. You know, but we're at this point, you know, he's going to go in and compete for different roles, and it could be starting, but it also could be at the pen, and we know how beneficial it was to have him in the bullpen last year too.
Is it going to be kind of similar to last year in terms of casting a pretty wide net at the outset of guys that you're setting up for multiple innings and then seeing how it shakes out from there?
It looks like it. Yeah, we're planning that way.
So there you go, White Sox general manager Chris Getz addressing several topics, including the most recent signing of outfielder Austin Hayes. Hey, White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and so much more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, fascinating article written by ESPN MLB writer Alden Gonzalez concerning Edgar Caro and his work with Driveline. We'll do that coming up next right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. And if you're a casual baseball fan, you've probably heard the name Driveline over the last decade. But even if you're the most hardcore of baseball fans out there, you may have a sneaking suspicion of what Driveline is, but chances are you don't know the great details of what it actually is. You probably remember it being mostly about helping pitchers over the last decade, 15 years, we'll call it. But over the last five or so, because Driveline created such an imbalance where they made it so much harder for hitters to actually hit the baseball because pitchers were just getting so nasty with all of the habits they were developing at Driveline, Driveline recognized that, hey, it is a two-phase game, and we should do some more to help hitters out. And that's something that they've been focusing on over the last 5 or 6 years specifically. And Alden Gonzalez, who covers Major League Baseball for ESPN, just posted in the last week or so a fantastic piece about Driveline as he went to the facility with Edgar Caro. Of course, White Sox fans, you're very familiar with him. And covered what Edgar Caro went through in his two-day experience at Driveline, and also what exactly hitters can expect when they go through the process. Alden Gonzalez of ESPN joins me right here on ESPN 1000. Alden, thanks so much for the time this morning. I want to tell you a fantastic piece, and I loved it because White Sox fans, I think, were ecstatic about Edgar Caro's rookie season. But what I loved about your piece was the reality that for as good as a rookie season as it was for Edgar Caro, there's the reality that I think he still has work to do if he wants to become a consistent everyday player, which is something that I think your piece hit on in particular.
Yeah, and I think White Sox fans should be encouraged because he's still so young. He debuted and got semi-regular playing time at a really young age. And he's still at a point in his career, and this is something that the people at Driveline were trying to hit on with him, that he could make some substantive improvements with his offensive profile. The fact that he is a switch-hitting catcher, the type of guy who should be able to stick at the position, who has already spent a lot of time this offseason trying to improve on his pitch framing, and can still get better. I mean, any franchise would love to have one prospect like that. The fact that the White Sox basically have two in Edgar Caro and Teal is incredible. But speaking of Edgar Caro specifically, there's a lot of things that and I learned this through being a Driveline, that he does really well as a hitter that you really can't teach, which is he has an ability to meet the baseball with the barrel of his bat. Very simple thing that is incredibly difficult to do. And he's somebody who has great plate discipline. He could differentiate a ball from a strike he doesn't chase. And there are other aspects of his game that if he improves them, his profile could rise significantly. And it was very, very interesting to sort of learn that while spending a couple of days with him a couple of weeks ago.
I love that. Alden Gonzalez joining me here on White Sox Weekly. And you're right. For the White Sox, it is a bit of an embarrassment of riches behind the plate with two young catchers that are probably the envy of, you know, in all of baseball when you consider the ages of both Caro and Teal. It's funny because, Alden, I'm thinking back to this past season, and, you know, I work on every broadcast with Len Casper and Darren Jackson, and it felt like every other day we were having conversations about Caro versus Teal. And not that you need to pit them against each other, but the reality of, hey, you want to get each of these young catchers at bats as often as possible. And Edgar Caro, for all the good framing things that Kyle Teal does, Caro behind the plate with his arm definitely was able to stifle running games against the White Sox last year, which was a problem the year prior. So in a lot of ways, it's an embarrassment of riches for them behind the plate. But it also has that problem of how do you get each guy enough at bats so that you can feel comfortable about their progression as a hitter. I found it interesting that in your piece about Driveline, that Edgar Caro, for all the good things he does, it felt like reading, if he can apply some of the stuff that he learned at Driveline, it feels like he could be somebody who could truly break out if he can add a couple of miles per hour to his bat swing.
Yeah, and I think that's been a pillar of the Driveline hitting program. And I wrote a story about this a couple of years ago about how the Dodgers sent a group of their hitters to their main facility in Kent, Washington, to do the bat speed training program. And it's really sort of taken off ever since. And they use a lot of the it was fascinating to sit in the room and sort of have them go through the biomechanical data. Mm-hmm. Because you could tell somebody that you need to improve their bat speed, but if you just sort of present it to them in a vacuum, it could lead to bad results offensively. Like, okay, fine, you're training for bat speed, but you don't really know how your body moves in space. All of a sudden, like, that could really trigger a lot of swing and miss. It could throw off your mechanics. So for Driveline and other facilities who have these types of resources, it's hammering home the point of bat speed, but also just like knowing how your body moves, knowing where the breakdowns are in how your body moves, and sort of apply and marrying those two principles together to just make you basically the most efficient as possible. And, you know, not to get too in the weeds with Edgar Caro, but with him, like, you know, there was an issue with him sort of leaking out, his front side flying open a little bit early. He needed to stay close a little bit more with his hips. And I mean, Edgar Caro was among the bottom of the league in bat speed. And if there's one sort of direct correlation, or as close to one as you can get for an aspect of your swing directly resulting in, you know, results in increased slug, bat speed is one of them. And he's, you know, I'll credit the White Sox. Like, Edgar Carroll was familiar with the concept. He had been training with Driveline's bat speed trainers with the White Sox. So they introduced that to him. But I think Driveline kind of takes it to a whole new level in terms of breaking down every part of how his body moves so that he could be as efficient as possible and he could swing the bat as quickly as possible. And one more thing I want to mention about Edgar that was really interesting to hear. He hits the ball really deep into the strike zone, right? Like, I think the average amount of time that he makes contact is right above home plate. And so one thing that they were telling him is that because you catch the ball deep, you're not giving your bat speed enough time to basically accelerate. Mm-hmm. If he hits the ball out front a little bit more, he will have better bat speed, and that should translate into more power.
Love to hear it. Alden Gonzalez joining me here on White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, he just in the last week posted an article on ESPN.com regarding Edgar Carroll and his experience at Driveline. Fantastic read. I highly recommend folks out there check it out. Another fascinating part of this story to me, Alden, was you touched upon how Edgar Carroll, Cuban, this is for outside of what you just mentioned, his familiarity with within the White Sox organization, but the reality that for so many, you know, Cuban or Latin players, this is kind of like a new reality that is being pushed in front of their face as soon as maybe when they get to the minors or the majors. Whereas, you know, in some places, as Driveline and facilities like it become more and more prevalent, there are people who are, you know, in high school age who yeah. now are doing all of these techniques. So it was interesting to read in your piece how this was for Edgar Carroll, in some ways, a new experience for the first time.
Yeah, and I give Edgar a lot of credit because he wants to get better and he wants to look at every aspect of his game to get better. And he's interested in this stuff. And I think he learned a lot from this session. And I think it's why it was important to him and his representatives at Belangi to bring him out there. And I go back to the whole pitch framing thing. Like, he knows that he needs to be a better pitch framer. And so he's been working with some coaches and some people who are really good at teaching pitch framing over the offseason. It's a point of emphasis for him. And I think you hit it. I think you hit on it exactly in terms of, like, if you look at the showcase scene in the United States, kids who are, and it's getting younger and younger and younger. And a lot of this stuff is, I'm afraid to say, it's just companies trying to take money from parents who all think that their kids could be major league players. Mm-hmm. But like, analytics and all this stuff is now at the high school levels. It is at the middle school levels. You see collegiate programs now who have more resources in advanced analytics than even some major league teams do. And so one of the points that the Driveline's director of hitting, Tanner Stokey, was making to me was that, you know, the fluency in this stuff is improving, right? Like, for veteran major league hitters, like, a lot of this stuff is foreign concepts because that's not how they came up. But yeah. Now guys are reaching professional baseball and they want this stuff because this is what they have. Most of these guys go to big-time college programs who have these resources. Go to the big-time showcases who expose them to all this data that to try to sort of maximize their abilities. Edgar Carroll had none of that. Edgar Carroll came up in Cuba. You know, Cuba doesn't have that stuff. He went to Haiti. He went to the Dominican Republic. That stuff's not prevalent to him. So by the time he got to the White Sox, as in his 21 years old, he had a lot of catching up to do. In that space. And that's where I credit Edgar, because he's embracing it and he knows how much better it can make him and he wants to learn more.
Last thing as I get you out on this one, Alden Gonzalez joining me here on White Sox Weekly. And I loved about your piece regarding Driveline and pun intended, how it showed Edgar Carroll's drive to get better. The reality is, too, you kind of wrapped up the story about how Edgar Carroll essentially did a two-day session, and he yeah. did it about 3 weeks prior to the start of spring training. Driveline, they're preferred when they're working with major leaguers is, hey, if we can get you in as soon as the offseason basically starts, we can make some more improvements if we're working with you through your entire offseason. So for all the work that he's done so far, it feels like this could be just scratching the surface for Edgar Carroll and his work with Driveline.
Yeah, and it'll be up to him, and I think a lot of it will depend on maybe how the season goes or how comfortable he feels sort of applying some of the drills with him. But yeah, and I was actually surprised to learn this, but Driveline does prefer that players go in right after the season. Even no matter how tired they might be, they feel like that's the best, not only because it gives them more time to work with the player, but they feel like it's the best time to sort of assess a player. And so I think the good thing about Edgar Carroll's session, even though it was only 2 days, mm-hmm. It gave him a real foundational understanding that I think few other places can match, that sort of allows him to understand where the deficiencies are. I think he has a clear understanding for, and I'm sure the White Sox have presented this to him too in some respects, but for what he does well, and then what he doesn't do well, and what he needs to do to sort of improve those areas. I will say, though, it's really difficult. When you get into a major league game and you're facing major league pitching and there are real stakes, guys get into survival mode.
Yeah.
So things that they are working on sometimes go by the wayside. And that's why training as often and as long as possible to build that sort of muscle memory where it just becomes second nature, I think that's why the benefit is a full offseason. So, in a best case scenario, Edgar Carroll applies some of these concepts. He sees improvements in his slug, which he should hit for more power than he showed as a rookie. And then he starts with them from the start of the offseason.
Loved it, Alden. It was, like I said, a fantastic behind-the-scenes look at what Driveline does for hitters.
Thank you.
So, just for baseball fans in general, I encourage you to go seek it out. It's on Alden Gonzalez's Twitter feed if you want to check it out. A link's there. But check it out on ESPN.com. And, of course, for White Sox fans, because it focused in particular on Edgar Carroll, it's of particular interest. Alden Gonzalez, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Again, check out Alden's feed, his Twitter feed, if you want to check that article out. It's at Alden, A-L-D-E-N, _ Gonzalez on Twitter. It's pinned right at the top of his feed. White Sox fans, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. Jeff Meller back here on ESPN 1000. When we come back, we'll let you hear from the newest edition of the White Sox, and that is Austin Hayes on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Celebrate your special occasion in 2026 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the best spaces and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd, plus other big matchups against the Cubs, Dodgers, and Yankees. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. I'm Jeff Meller. Welcome back on in to White Sox Weekly. Just had a conversation with Alden Gonzalez regarding Edgar Carroll and Driveline this past off season, and we also earlier on let you hear from Chris Getz in regards to the White Sox edition of Austin Hayes. Shortly after Chris Getz met with the media on Thursday, Austin Hayes did as well, and the conversation began when Austin Hayes was asked specifically about what it's like being a free agent, a veteran free agent, this day and age in baseball in 2026, where it looks like the entire industry is moving more towards embracing younger, cheaper players, cheaper options, rather than going into the free agent mark and splurging on some free agents. It was something that Austin Hayes addressed out of the chute.
Yeah, there comes a point in everybody's career where there's teams looking at what your abilities are and what you're capable of doing on the field, and you've hit arbitration or you've hit free agency, and you're going to start making more money now, and teams just look at your ability, and maybe they look at some young guys, and they'd rather just take their chances with the young guys. It's definitely helped me in my career that I've been a very consistent player. Most of my seasons I've put up pretty similar numbers, so you kind of know what you're going to get with a guy like me. I think that is what helps me the most when now that I'm reaching those points in my career. This is my second straight year in free agency. So just being a guy who works hard, has a good reputation in the clubhouse, and is a pretty consistent player. Seems like teams definitely value that still, you know. I know some older guys are getting pushed out of the game, but I still think there's a lot of love from the teams and in Major League Baseball for guys who they show up and they play hard every day and they're very consistent and they've been consistent in their careers. I think they're still getting rewarded for that.
Hey, Austin, first of all, kind of what attracted you to this situation in Chicago, this opportunity?
Yeah, the word opportunity. I'm 30 years old, coming off a strong season last year. Unfortunately, I had the kidney infection the year before, and I wasn't able to play as much as I would have wanted to. Last year, I was able to get my health back and reestablish myself after really feeling like I had a lost year. So going back into free agency, I really wanted to go somewhere where I would have an opportunity to do that, play every day, get back to being able to play both sides of the ball, play defense every day as well. And there's a tremendous opportunity with Chicago to be able to do that. I got a lot to give, and I'm going to be able to give that here with this team. And it's a young, exciting team. I've talked to some guys that I played with in the past that have been part of Chicago, and they said they got a really good thing going over here. They really liked the staff. They really liked the gel of the clubhouse and the guys. So being able to have an opportunity and then hearing nothing but good things about the clubhouse and the culture that they have here. And they played really well in the second half last year. So I think they're starting to turn a corner, and the opportunity to play a lot and to go somewhere where things are looking up. And I think it's going to be a young, fun team.
It is going to be a really young team. And Chris was on here talking about your reputation in the clubhouse and your ability to kind of help young players learn about, you know, playing Major League Baseball every day was one of the reasons why they were attracted to you. Like, how have you worked with those situations in the past, and how much pride do you take on passing along the knowledge you've learned in the game in your years in baseball?
Yeah, I had a lot of guys that have helped me tremendously throughout the course of my career. And it's come in stages, you know, when I was a rookie and then when I was a couple years into my career, feeling like, okay, I've started to establish myself a little bit, but there's another step that you got to take. There's levels to this game. And then being traded, reaching free agency, you know, I've had to lean on a lot of older guys who have gone through it all and done it all, dealing with injuries, raising a family in the game. There's a lot of parts to the game that you really know nothing about until you go through it. So I've leaned on older guys a lot in my career, and I've experienced a lot of those things myself now. So I bring that to the table, just a lot of the stuff, the ins and outs and the daily things that guys maybe just they haven't experienced yet and they have questions about. And then as far as like leadership and what I bring to the table inside the clubhouse and on the field, I mean, I try to show up and work as hard as I possibly can every day, never take a day for granted. I know how hard it is to play in the big leagues and to stay in the big leagues. So just trying to lead by example and go about my business the right way, be a pro in every part of the game. That's really how I try to approach my daily life in the leagues. And I seem to have a good reputation for that. I know that was a big draw for Cincinnati wanting to sign me last year. They kind of had a younger clubhouse, and they'd been close to making the playoffs but hadn't quite made that push yet. So we talked a lot about that last offseason before I signed with them, and I had a tremendous experience with them this past year and with Tito. So a lot of those talks that I had with Cincy last offseason were similar as to what I was talking with Chris about, and you know where this team is at and what they're looking for out of me. So I kind of got to experience that last year with Cincy, and had a great experience with it. So I look forward to being able to do that with this team too.
Hey, Austin, just how much does that connection with Ryan Fuller kind of add to the comfort level coming on in?
Yeah, I love Fuller. I had a great relationship with him in Baltimore. He helped me out a lot in my career. We made a couple swing adjustments that I really felt like helped me make the All-Star team in 2023. So I've been through the trenches with him. You know, he's helped me through a lot of things. And it was nice to see a familiar face when I jumped on the Zoom call with everybody from the White Sox, and Fuller was on there. He had his PowerPoints and everything going. So, yeah, it'll be good to see him in spring training. I got a great relationship with Fuller.
What did you learn about yourself going through last year, coming on back from the injury and being able to produce as well?
I had to dig deep going through what I did with the kidney infection. That was a really tough year in 2024. So last year was it was a very rewarding season for me. To have the conversations that I did with Cincy and the moves that they were making last year, they were bringing in Lux, they were bringing in Trevino, they were bringing in myself, guys that had been in the league, guys that had been in the playoffs before, really feeling like we could just help with the culture there a little bit and just add to the skills that the team already had, but just add a little bit more experience. And then we were able to do it. You know, we made the playoffs and we won a lot of games, and it was a really fun season. And then personally, you know, I dealt with some stuff in the beginning of the year as little lasting effects of the kidney infection, but you know, once I really got going, it was a great year. I felt really good. So this year I feel like I'm, you know, way ahead of where I was starting out last year. Being able to finish the year healthy and really just feel like myself mentally and physically, being all the way back now. So I'm really excited for this year. Really excited.
You just to kind of follow up on what you mentioned about Fuller, just what about your game do you feel like kind of took a next step, you know, in 23 with him? And have you guys kind of talked about things you want to work on or you know, even enhance from there since you've joined?
Yeah, it was more of the lower half, but a little bit to do with the upper half. I was really just trying to get to a strong position and hold it for as long as possible until you start swinging and just not allowing yourself to carry your hands with you and let your lower half open early, which that's what I had a lot of problems with. And when I'm hitting a lot of ground balls pull side, that's usually it. So we were able to develop a really good routine and some good drills and things for me to do throughout the course of the season to just try to maintain that and battle against bad habits that creep up sometimes during the year. So that year, we had a good solid plan. I did a lot of work in the off season going into that year to come into spring training with a good strong base and being mechanically sound. And, you know, we were able to put it all together. So I still do a lot of the same stuff now. I had a pretty good year last year. It was pretty consistent. I had a 3-week stretch where mechanically things started to break down a little bit, but I was able to make the adjustments that I needed. So we had already talked about that a little bit of, you know, when things were going well, when I wasn't swinging it as well, and how can we combat that, and what will we need to do this year to stay strong and move well throughout the whole course of the year so that I can have a great season for the White Sox.
You mentioned feeling kind of like the stuff you went through early last year, being a little bit of a hangover from the kidney infection. How did you kind of get to the point where you are now where you're feeling like, you know, 140 games is a realistic goal and your routine feels pretty good about, you know, sustaining that?
I think part of it was just time. You know, it was what I went through was systemic. So it's not like, okay, you do 4 weeks of rehab on this muscle and then you're back to full go. It had affected a lot of different areas of my body, and being able to do the blood test that I did and see like where my body had been kind of malnourished and it wasn't working right, and why I was continuing to be so sore, why I was experiencing so much fatigue, I was able to supplement with all the right things. So I think being able to replenish my body of all the things that it was low in, that played a big part in it. And it just takes time to be able to do that, you know, to recover from something that wiped me out as much as it did. And then the other part was having a full, healthy off season. You know, last year, going into the year, I got to the end of the season and I was so sick at the end of the year, I couldn't start lifting and training and having a full healthy off season. I had to take time to just rest. So the off season was essentially very short. So I felt like I was behind going into spring training last year, and I was still able to come out playing really well in spring training. So this year my confidence is so much higher because I've been able to train the whole off season and get my strength back and really just be where I want to be going into spring training.
So there you go. Newest member of the White Sox, outfielder Austin Hayes. Interesting to hear him talk about trying to hit that 140-game mark in his career. Austin Hayes played 145 games back in 2022. He also played 144 back in 2023. But you also heard him talk about dealing with some injuries last year for the Reds. He played in 103 games. He did, though, hit 15 homers, drive in 64 runs. Again, he mashes lefties. So at the very least, you're going to have a good short side of the platoon bat in Austin Hayes. He's also got versatility. He can play left. He can play right. He has played center field as well and was even an all-star starter back in 2023 as a center fielder. So he has a lot of versatility in the outfield that the White Sox can rely upon. And at the very least, you know, he should be able to crush lefties and maybe get back to his best days being reunited with White Sox director of hitting Ryan Fuller back like he did in their Baltimore days, again, when Austin Hayes was an all-star in 2023. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. When we come back, the White Sox have five players heading to the World Baseball Classic. We'll share with you who they are coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket pre-sales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Jeff Meller wrapping up this week's edition of White Sox Weekly. Before we get out of here, I wanted to let you know that five White Sox players will be competing in this year's World Baseball Classic, the 2026 edition. Of course, they do it every 4 years. Or thereabouts when pandemics don't interrupt. Needless to say, the White Sox will be sending five, and I wanted to let you know who they are. Kyle Teal and Sam Antonacci will both be representing Italy. Curtis Meade will be representing Australia. Munetaka Murakami will be playing for the defending champs, Japan. And then right-handed pitcher Sir Anthony Dominguez will be in the Dominican Republic's bullpen as they represent their respective countries again in this 2026 World Baseball Classic. Play begins on March 5th, and it will run roughly 2 weeks. The championship game will be in Miami on March 17th. So that is going to do it for this edition of White Sox Weekly. We'll get more into the rosters and maybe break it down a little more when we have more time next week for the World Baseball Classic. But I want to say thank you to Alden Gonzalez for joining me after he wrote a spectacular piece on Edgar Caro and his time at Driveline this offseason. Thank you to him. And thank you, as always, to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley. I'm Jeff Meller. We will talk to you again next week as we get ready for spring training, folks, right here in your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.